So with Game of Thrones, this is like the calm-ish before the storm. It's somewhat traditional in Game of Thrones that episode 9 is the big shocking conflict, and then episode 10 is the settling down, letting the pieces lay type of episode, right? So this episode 8 is like what you might think of as the calm before the storm.
This is like the right before the portal. This is like everybody walks through the portal together, because I'm guessing at the end of that episode, Viserys is basically like dead. I don't know if he died in the last shot,
I
but
think he kind of did. I think that was like the
yeah.
poetic ending moment, because if I recall from the preview for the next episode, they say like the king is dead, what's going to happen?
Oh.
So
Because
it kicks off.
I looked at the character guide and it says deceased for him, so that pretty much confirms it.
Pretty
Because
much,
I
good
thought
one.
during that whole episode, I thought the king was dead at some parts in that episode, because they didn't see him for so long. I was like, wait a minute, where is he? And I was like, oh, okay. But
That would
yeah.
have been kind of interesting if
Like they
they.
didn't show his death at all and they just like passed over it. Yeah, that would have been quite a cutout.
So I'm just looking at the family tree here. This is
Yeah.
interesting. I've noticed, because they update it after every episode. I've noticed. I think I don't know if this is a ch something I've just noticed, but Alicent Hightower has now a brother listed, Gawain Hightower.
Yeah, because we don't know what happened to him. Still, that I think that's been there.
Has that always been there?
I think that's always been there, but I think we like don't know what happened to him. I don't recall much
Maybe
discussion
he's yet
on
to make an
him, but
appearance.
maybe he's yet to make an appearance. I don't know. I don't know what the
Who
little torch
knows?
means.
The little torch is the House
It's just
Hightower
that's just
sigil.
House Hightower sigil. Okay.
Yeah, it's like they have their logo.
So there's not a lot of them.
No, they are. I mean, I think what the case is like there's more of them. They're just not part of the show yet, or part of the show at all.
Right, possibly, yeah.
So it's they're only yeah they've only listed characters of some consequence here. So we see a section of our sort of primary cast now growing up. We have Baelor Targaryen, Rhaenyra Targaryen, Jacaerys
Jacaerys?
Velaryon,
Is it Jacaerys?
Jacerys,
Jacaerys, Lucerys,
Little
Velaryon,
Joffrey,
and Joffrey.
and then we have Aegon Targaryen, Helena Targaryen, Aemond Targaryen. I got to admit, Aemond Targaryen, I know he's kind of supposed like he looks so teenagery in that like in this episode, right? I'm
Yeah.
sure like as he'll age, they age him up, he'll grow more into that kind of the oh, do we have a Jenny?
Well, we have Jenny.
Have
Hello.
a while Jenny has appeared. Good. We're just doing the beginning utterances. We're reacclimatizing ourselves to the character guide. So you're in just in time.
Okay, cool. Huh.
Oh, just going through the
Finished.
door. Well done, Jenny.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just
Cool.
made it.
Wonderful.
We're
Glad
just
you could join us.
looking at the new additions of the new kids, the betrothed.
Which one do you hate the most?
What do you mean?
Which of all the kids do you hate the most?
Oh man.
Or is it just for their actions or their personalities or both?
Probably personalities, because who knows what's going to happen. It's if you think this is a happy ending, you haven't been paying attention, right?
Yeah. Well, I mean, and like Aegon's a rapist, so that, kind of takes the bits
I
away from
was
me.
getting that vibe as well, but I heard
Yeah.
other shows say that he just knocked her up. But
I
I.
did. It was definitely like I did. It was Orchisect who was talking about it. He was like, "Oh, he's just, he's sleeping around, tut tut, sleeping around." But
She
like,
seemed quite traumatized,
yeah, like she said that he didn't know he was there, and then she told him to stop. Like,
Oh, right. Yeah, she did, didn't she? And also,
yeah.
I suspect Alicent Hightower would not have been as angry if it was, as he said, harmless fun. So.
Yeah, I've got. That's the reason why she was so pissed off with it, was because it was, it wasn't just sex out of wedlock. It was, you know, that I think that's why she called him "You're no son of mine." It's not just the sex part, which obviously she abhors because of religion, but like non-consensual sex as well.
So they really are
setting up so that Baela, Rhaenyra, Jacaerys, Lucerys, and Joffrey are like the good side, and then Aegon and Aemond are the bad guys, with Helaena being what seems to be like the Tyrion, like on the bad side, but like you kind of like them, right?
Well,
Aemond was the one that he, at the end of the, right, he was going to do a toast, but then he was referencing Strong, like he was questioning the children again, right? And they're,
I think Aemon scares me. Aegon is a shit. Like, you know, I think Aemon, I wouldn't want to be the king because he'd destroy everything. Aegon, I would think, would make a crappy king because he just wouldn't focus and would be, like, yeah. They're interesting. And poor Helaena. Poor Helaena.
Who did she dance with? She danced with...
Jacaerys?
Was Jacaerys?
I genuinely can never tell Jacaerys and Lucerys, like, which one's which. I'm hoping they'll develop more personality so I can start telling them apart.
I'll tell you one thing about Jacaerys that I do kind of cringe at. Maybe that's what, like, you're supposed to. But, like, he's so quick to wind up.
Yeah.
Right? Like, I can't even blame Aemond for being a bit of a dick when Jacaerys is just so easily, like, knocked, yeah, well, right? Like, even
Jacaerys has known that he's been, known that potentially people are going to call him bastard since he was 10. And clearly he's not had the Tyrion in his life to say, own it, where it is, or own it or fake it, or, you know, who gives a fluff, they don't care. If you didn't care, it wouldn't matter so much. He hasn't had that person to say, yes, but deal with it.
Don't show weakness. At the very least, don't show weakness, right? That's exactly what they want you to do. You're just playing into their trap. That I just found deeply frustrating. Maybe, like, if you didn't rise to it, they're fucking children, right? They're teenagers. They're jokers. They don't understand half of what they're doing, right? So
yeah, but that's why they try on a bunch of different masks, you know? So they can experiment and be fluid with their foolishness.
Because the thing is, from my point of view, like, Aemond is I don't think he comes across as just emo, right? Like, I can imagine him being older. Like, it was kind of cool when he was fighting with Kristen. And he was clearly like showing himself off, and it's like, yeah, like he's obviously like a decent fighter. I know what they're kind of going for, but like the long hair and the swagger just reek of like teenager. Do you know what I mean? Like,
but to me, Daemon, like there is some hero worship, and there is some like the fact that they've dressed them similar and they've got very similar hair. Damon,
yeah, there was that Damon moment where they stood side by side in a shot at the end.
Yeah,
and I was like,
and they both
ooh,
lean,
like...
and they both like so. Like, I think it'll be interesting to see. Like, we were discussing last week. Like, we've seen kind of the worst of Daemon, and now he's kind of settled out and kind of chilled out a little bit. Obviously, not that chilled in this episode, but chilled out a little bit. And then I'll be interested to see what Aemond works himself up to be. But there's definitely, so much, not just, physical similarity in terms of how they've dressed them. But, I think there was a very specific choice in the casting there to try and make it look like there is familial resemblance.
Like a doppelganger. A younger doppelganger or something.
Yeah.
For sure, yeah. That's what teenagers do, isn't it? They find people who they look up to and mimic them, right? That's like such a
It's a survival mechanism.
Yeah, exactly. So, and actually, funnily enough, I was getting a very Cersei vibes from Alicent this episode as well. So, it was I've got a question about this Driftwood Throne. When they come into the throne room, and Corlys is Brother, right? Vaemond Velaryon, yeah.
Yep.
Now deceased.
Oh, he interrupts. He interrupts. Who does he interrupt? Rhaenyra?
He is the first person to accuse the Velaryons of bastardry. And I don't know if that's a word, but bear with me. And
probably is.
I keep thinking, when Daemon took his head off, he's like, you can keep with the tongue. I think he could have done better. Like, I know it was a spur of the moment thing, but he could have been like, well,
his aim was off.
I mean, it was beautiful the fact that he managed to slice the head in half with the tongue just dangling. Like, that's a pretty good. It's a good quip when you take into account how skilled that particular slice
I don't
was.
Understand.
Was that purposeful,
I,
or was he like no. actually aiming for the neck though?
Well, I think he's probably aiming for the neck and just missed. But like, I can't imagine that happening. Well, actually, to be fair, that wouldn't happen. I'm pretty sure that the bone and stuff would like not provide a clean swipe, right? I mean, I don't know.
I think the idea is probably perhaps the suggestion is a normal sword, you'd have to do it through the neck in order to get a clean swipe. But with Dark Sister, you can cut directly through skull
in a
singular swipe. So it might... not tongue. because puns. You know, because quips. I think that was meant to show, like, A, Daemon is still kind of reckless and... You know, he still has that kind of craziness about him. Equally, he's very skilled as a fighter, and that sword is kind of... Shift X said the way he described it is kind of like the lightsabers. Mm. Valerian steel is like the lightsabers of this world. And I think it might have been to kind of highlight how powerful the sword is. I don't know. Yeah. But it was definitely... For me, it was a... He's really, really trying to make a point, and like... If we're going with historical references, it was always a kingly thing to be beheaded. Like, to be beheaded was a sign of respecting nobility. Peasants are hung, and royalty are beheaded. But to not slice through the neck is a sign of disrespect. So I feel like it might be a reference to that, maybe.
Well,
it's definitely a lot cleaner when it's on the neck. You know,
that's why it saved royalty. But you know, he wasn't going to throw him through him, was he? He was going to go for something a bit more dramatic.
He wasn't going to Rhea Royce him, was he? Or was he? No.
Drama mama. I think Daemon and Aemond are drama mamas. They want the room to look at them.
Center of attention, and like I mentioned before, when I was poking the bear with the stick.
Mm. So my question to you folks is. Is the slicing up of Vaemond Velaryon, did that make things better or worse in terms of conflict and war? Because it seems to me, like it says here on the House of the Dragon character guide, that Corlys Velaryon not deceased, Vaemond Velaryon very much deceased. Like, I know that obviously Corlys is not going to be happy that his brother got beheaded, but like... His brother also went directly against his named heir, his wishes. It was kind of like, it was Valyrian treason, right? In of sorts, right? Maybe? Am I, like, is this...
The whole point, wasn't the whole point before this to, like, unite the two sides somewhat to maintain the peace well? I don't know if it's a good thing, I mean...
The thing that I'm where at the moment is I think Corlys is not long for the world. I think that's kind of what they were going for here is what do you do when the patriarch of the dynasty is going. So I don't think Corlys is going to be a significant factor in who joins which side going forward. I think it's going to be all about Rhaenys. And there was some interesting like set and direction with Rhaenys this episode where like will she, now that she's lost so much, like she's lost her son, her daughter, there was...
Her crown?
Her crown. She's kind of losing both of her grandchildren because they're getting married to the side that she knows are impure. and presumably her husband's not long for this world. Will it go to this place where she is kind of flippant and doesn't care about things, so nothing matters, so, you know, who gives a fluff, let the world burn, or is it going to be, I don't know, I think she's the main, I think her dynasty is going to become a matriarchy rather than patriarchy. I don't think Corlys is going to be significant going forward. I think Rhaenys is going to be the primary player on that side, but I genuinely do not know what she is going to do now that everything's happened. I think it's significant that Rhaenyra swore to Rhaenys in the Godswood that she wasn't responsible for Laena's death, and that might have been a factor in her taking the side of the Blacks. But technically, in the same way that when Rhaenyra swore to Alicent that she didn't have sex with Daemon, technically, he never actually, you know, went all the way. So technically, it's about
degrees. It's a spectrum.
Yeah.
Is kissing and like kissing not sex?
Well, though, we can argue it? Forever where the line is, you know.
Yes, well, you know, I think given the, I don't know, the power put on chastity and virginity, I think the he never touched me is not technically true, but in terms of what's important, I say in quotes, regarding premarital chastity, she was technically, she didn't have sex with Daemon.
Kissing in a brothel is very close to the line.
It's very close to the line, but you know, if you were to go with a purely biological examination, which doesn't prove much, then yeah.
Well, I think the genuine area for concern was less about the actual sex, but more about the appearance. Like, it's not necessarily the truth; it's the appearance of truth, right? The perception of truth, and I think being seen in a pleasure house,
kissing
is like it's as bad, really, because no one's going to say, "Oh, we were in a brothel kissing, but we didn't have sex." It's like, really,
the environment. It's like the environment defines who you are.
Between the attitude of the general attitude of society versus Alicent's specific questioning that specific point in time. Alicent's specific questions were, did you have sex with Daemon? Not, are you still a virgin? And did you do something amoral or silly? You know, I think Rhaenyra did do something silly and was seen doing something silly, but
guilty of being silly. Oh, you're right, Jenny.
You're right.
Sorry.
Oh.
Sorry, I dropped my microphone.
My bad. Can you hear me?
She dropped you, people listening at home. She dropped you.
I care. I'm sorry, podcast people. I'm sorry. I hope that wasn't horrible.
No, it wasn't crazy.
It's okay. Well, I mean, it's the people at home you have to apologize to, really, isn't it?
Sorry, people at home. It sounded fine to me. It just sounded like a tiny tap.
if I can remember, I'll try and soften it or something. But
yes,
no promises.
Okay, I think I'll be editing this later tonight. Metaphor from this show episode about dropping things that I was dropping the ball, like Viserys dropped the ball his entire reign. There we go. Sorry about that, guys.
Sorry.
Right. So
that'll do.
Well, one thing I noticed, an ominous missing person was Larys Strong.
You're right. He wasn't even in this entire
notably
episode, right?
Absent.
No, his silence spoke volumes. But like, and I don't know, and I've only seen this twice. Like, I can't, and Larys Strong's one of those people. So a little bit like Littlefinger, when you rewatch the show, you see all the little strings that people like that pull. If he's indeed as clever as Littlefinger, or is playing the role of Littlefinger. And I think if he is, and he might not be, he might just be more like Ramsay than Littlefinger. It depends, right? Like we're still working him out as a character, and the intrigue is like delightful. But sometimes with these kind of things, you just end up like, oh, it wasn't that clever. You just got lucky a few times, or maybe it's, oh, I see what you did there. Oh, I see what you did there. So I don't know if on rewatch we're going to like look at all these things and like see some of the events that he put in place maybe in previous episodes come to fruition and not really clocked it until maybe later episodes.
Yeah.
Yeah, because I found specifically with this episode that there wasn't too much like allegory or kind of payoff in this episode. It felt very by no means like shallow, but most of the things that were presented seemed to be just of the moment. You know, it's the awkward family dinner, it's the bitching about like teasing your cousins about being bastards. You know, this fake a genuine reconciliation that you know is not going to last. And the inevitable kind of romanticized tragic death of Viserys. Like all of it seemed pretty much like it was what you see, unlike some other episodes where it feels like you're like, oh, what does this mean? Foreshadowing, what does this mean? So I'll be interested to see whether or not in future episodes this things happened in this episode that we didn't see are then actually foreshadowing stuff, or whether or not it was just one of those filler episodes that kind of is as it is. Because it was a great episode. It was, you know.
A lot of the episodes previously, right, though, they had some kind of common theme that was through it, and this one didn't have as much of that.
Yeah, it didn't feel like it, you know, it was, it felt very much like a story of the fall of Viserys, which is a good story, but it didn't feel as complex as some other episodes.
Well, I think you could perhaps tie a theme to this, which is sort of like the death of the older generation. I mean, in this episode alone, we lost, I think, depending on how you count as Corlys, because he was obviously missing and he's probably on his way out, we lost Vaemond and, of course, Viserys.
Yeah.
It's like the death of the patriarchy, maybe, or something to that effect, like certainly the weakening of it. Possibly.
Depending on your interpretation of, if you're going with that as the theme, the death of the higher generation, Rhaeny's conversation about having seen and looked at the stranger and her being familiar with the stranger, if they choose to go with her kind of her post bereavement stress being a state of indifference or a state of apathy, and that could be a metaphor for the death of that particular part of the generation. I don't think so. I feel like she's not going to take anything lying down. She might like come back with a wrathful, blind rage, or she could become genuinely apathetic in her old, through all of her losses, in which case it would be like a death, even if she is still physically alive.
Yeah.
It could be. I mean, I don't know. It could go any number of ways, because, like, for example, the death of Corlys could change her mindset so that she sort of adopts his vision, or like in his honor, she pursues the crown for Rhaenyra, because that's what he kind of wanted, right? Like, correct the historic record as such. Maybe it could be survival.
It's interesting with Rhaenys, because obviously I think it's been 7 years. They said, I think it was 7 years between her and Corlys having that conversation in the last episode. So it's been 7 years since the death of both of her children, and she seemed somewhat distant from her grandchildren. But Corlys has been off doing battle and fighting ships and stuff, so he's still been pursuing his legacy the whole time, doing his kind of post-middle age, I will recapture my youth and adventure as a result of the loss of my children. And she was at home ruling. I genuinely think she wouldn't have gone Rhaenyra said that she thought Rhaenys was there to advocate for herself, say, I should become heir to the Iron Throne, not the Bastards, or...
You mean the Driftwood Throne?
The Driftwood Throne. So I don't think there's a chance of her necessarily... I think she will be a somewhat shallow ally to Rhaenyra, because right up until the last minute, she was going to go against Rhaenyra. She was going to say, give the throne to me, until the point where Viserys stepped up in the last minute. So I don't know. It's interesting that she had that turning point when Viserys turned up. Mm. I genuinely think she wasn't going to side with Rhaenyra. She was going to advocate for herself and do a three-way split, not to Vaemon and not to Rhaenyra, but to her granddaughters. I think that's what she was going to pitch right up until Viserys turned up. What I was thinking.
Well, that would have been quite interesting because her heirs then would have been Baela and Rhaena rather than...
And she'd refused the marriage as well. So she could have then married her daughter, her granddaughter to someone else. I don't know. That was my interpretation. So I'm interested to kind of rewatch it and see whether or not I can work out what her thought process was of why she switched from advocating for... Because she hadn't accepted the marriage until... point, and I think she'd refused it.
Well, in terms of what she gets, if she's acting in her self-interest, which I don't is not a foregone conclusion, a marriage between Baela Rhaena and Jacaerys and Lucerys, that would have netted her very nearly the same effect without any conflict, without any division. You know, it's a political match that probably works kind of quite well, especially considering that all four of those kids, I suppose they're like grown up now a bit, they're all like decent people. Like,
yeah, I think my thought process with that was from what Rhaenys has said in the past in the show, she doesn't care about the legacy of the Iron Throne. She cares about the Driftwood Throne, but not of the Iron Throne. And she doesn't want a family married into the royal line, because if they marry into the royal line, then they're in danger and war will happen. And so perhaps her accepting of this marriage is actually a really deep state of apathy and not caring anymore, because, you know, her generation's dying off. If she's letting her granddaughters be married into the royal line, like, she knows that will put them in infinitely more danger. I think perhaps when she was having her initial conversation with Rhaenyra and denied the marriage and didn't want to support Rhaenyra, she was thinking, I can protect my girls. They can become the heirs to Driftwood Throne. I can marry them off to lesser lords. They wouldn't have to deal with any of this Targaryen bullshit anymore. They would be free. And... you know, Rhaenyra potentially has killed Lena. Like, the whole family is, like, her perspective is the Targaryens are toxic, pretty much. I know she's obviously their cousin, but, like, you know, she wants to protect her grandchildren who are actually the heirs. And then in marrying them back in the Targaryen line, she's putting them in danger. She's, like, so much going on with her as a character that I kind of want her to sit down with someone and just explain her thought process, which is not how the show works. But, like, I feel like she's got a lot of twisted motivations. Like, not twisted as in evil, but twisted as in hypocritical motivations.
Do you think she's sort of just apathetic and she's given up and decided to just get into the...
That could be one way that they're going to go with her character.
I think that's a strong word to use, though, because who would be apathetic about their grandchildren?
Does she feel like that's the best way to protect them now that everybody's basically gone on her side?
I feel like she said that marrying them into the crown would not protect them. Like, she didn't want Dana to marry Rhaenyra because she was worried that he would die. And then he died, I say in quotes. From her perspective, he's dead. So the fact that she's agreed for her granddaughters to be married back into the line is very different to her perspective. Yes, times change, so it might have just changed with time, but I don't know. I don't feel like marrying her daughters in will make them any safer. I think it will make them much more in danger.
Yeah, although it's worth remembering, of course, the famous George R. R. Martin quote, the only thing worth writing about is the human heart in conflict with itself. So, you know, she could be ambivalent. Yeah, she, and I like that the characters do come across like this. Like their thought processes and their motivations, they're not consistent. They do change.
7 years is a long time.
Yeah, you know? Yeah. I mean, I think that's all of us have grown a fair amount in the last 7 years. So,
yeah,
I think what's interesting is in those 7 years, she's, from what I can tell, she's basically been ruling Driftmark, raising one of her grandchildren as her ward, and kind of rocking her own stuff. She's been doing good. And then has been dragged back into the politics. So again, I'm interested to see where it goes with her, whether or not, like, what part she plays in the next round, because I've got the feeling the next episode is going to be spicy.
Well, I kind of gathered
from
this.
The king just died, so the scramble for his power begins, you know? Like,
well, this is it. This is the calm before the storm. This episode, I did feel it was very... It had that tension with no payoff, and the payoff is going to come not episode 9. And I can't even actually remember much other than the king is dead. I can't remember much from the preview actually, which might be on purpose. I think, you know, who knows what's going
on. I don't watch the preview.
I haven't actually watched the preview yet. I was going to, and I just haven't had a minute.
What did Viserys say to Allison at the end? Was it Rhaenyra?
He said he was talking about Aegon the Conqueror, but Allison was translating it as Aegon my son. And so Viserys thought he was finishing the conversation that he started with Rhaenyra about. She said, "Do you believe in the prophecy? Do you think it's real? If you want me to be your heir to push for the prophecy coming true, you need to support me." And then he thought he was finishing that conversation with Rhaenyra, but with Alicent, and was saying, "Yes, I believe Aegon is the one. What was right with what he saw in the North. I think you are the one, therefore you have to finish it." But he thought he was talking to Rhaenyra, so he thought he was saying, "Rhaenyra, you must be the heir. You are the rightful heir. You must continue the prophecy." But Alicent, whether by willful mistranslation or deliberate or genuine mistranslation, thought he was saying, "Your son Aegon is the true heir. He is the one that has to be king."
Wonder how that's going to affect stuff.
Mm-hmm. In terms of Game of Thrones poetry and echo, I've got the feeling Alicent is going to do the equivalent of what Ned did with Robert's will, where he takes the wording and tweaks it to their own mentality, whether deliberately or unintentionally, but like the fact that Ned altered the words to like my true heir instead of my son in the will. I've got the feeling that Alicent is going to take that, what Viserys was mumbling while near death in pain and on opioids, and take it as the king on his deathbed proclaimed Aegon the true heir.
Might use that to her advantage.
That's interesting you should say that, because I was definitely getting Ned Stark vibes from Vaemond. And lost his head in the process, right? Like
Vaemond, bless him, he was telling the truth. He was outing incest for the sake of protecting the throne and protecting, you know, the rightful ruler, and was telling the truth.
And that's what happened when you're trying to get that truth starts to come out. Stop.
Yes.
So obviously, with the difference would be that Ned gave Cersei the choice. Ned said to Cersei, "You can take your kids and run, because if I tell the king this, he will kill you." And the opposite with this one is Vaemond didn't give Rhaenyra a chance to rebuttal. And also, Viserys is completely loyal to Rhaenyra and has never shown any sign of anything other than being loyal to her and sticking to her as his heir. So, like, Vaemond saying that in court was signing his death warrant.
Yeah.
Like, and that That's why Daemon was so excited for it. Daemon was like, say it, say it.
Yeah.
Because saying it loud and proud in court in front of the king who has always supported his daughter is saying either kill me or kill your daughter and her bastards. And we know what Viserys is going to choose. So, people are saying Daemon committed cold-blooded murder in the courtroom. He literally just told the true, like, the designated heir to the throne and accused her of being a whore and her children being bastards in front of her husband, in front of the king.
Mm.
It was rash and it was reckless. And to be honest,
It's not becoming.
I don't exactly know the lore off the top of my head, but I felt like it was that's why Daemon was pushing for him to actually say the words.
That was, they are bastards and she's a whore. I'm pretty sure that
Daemon was ready. Treason. Daemon was ready to. Daemon was ready to take action.
It was
even if the king didn't order it, like Daemon was ready before the king would have said anything.
Yeah.
But, like, to be fair, in the last episode, Alicent committed very open treason. She should have got head chopped off for trying to stab Rhaenyra.
But Otto told her to say, "Oh, you were just a mad mother. You were desperate because of the loss of your son, and you had a moment hysterical. Of madness.
Women's hysteria. Yeah,
like women's hysteria. Women in their emotions. And you know, Viserys would have backed down. You know, Viserys would.
They're either hysterical or they're detached.
Vaemond asked for his tongue. Not Vaemond. Viserys asked for Vaemond's tongue. Which, you know, given the state of high treason that Vaemond committed in saying what he said, he should have been straight.
Yeah.
Decapitated. But Viserys was never going to do that because Viserys is Viserys. So kind of going back to, like, I think it was episode 2 or episode 1 when Daemon said, you know, I'd protect you from being you. You're not very good at being a king. I'm talking to Viserys.
Mm.
I've got the feeling that Daemon was doing what Viserys should have done. Like,
yeah.
If someone came into the court and did that to Rhaenyra, any other context, any other king would have decapitated them on sight, unless they had Daemon evidence.
He was just accelerating what was going to happen more gradually. All right, I do have to hop to go to my complex meeting, but have fun. Thanks for letting me speak on it. It's okay, no, keep going. Keep right, going.
Toodaloo. Everyone, Toodles, say, have fun. Everyone say bye to Matt in the comments.
Bye. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Mm. Yeah, I mean, chopped off.
Rightly trapped off. I mean, obviously, you know, Ned did basically the same thing. He accused the Queen's children of being bastards, but then was put in jail. And there was also the issue with the King being dead. So there was that time period of, and at the time, obviously, the other thing was Ned was hand of the King at the point where he accused Cersei of siring bastards, and the king was, you know, in his deathbed too. So you didn't have the, you know, it was the queen's word against the hands. So the hand was held in prison, and it took weeks to sort it out. And there was all this stuff that was going on in the background with Ned saying, "Well, this is a major lord, but just a lord with no standing in the council, accusing the heir to the throne of."
He's
front of the king.
He's quite quite far down the pecking order, really. Like, it's a bit.
So, you know, the fact that he was decapitated on sight is not all that shocking. There's a reason why no one really reacted in the courtroom. They all went, "Oh, okay."
Yeah, because like
carrying on.
I mean, it's difficult not to see this through the lens of Game of Thrones, where the Valyrians are basically wiped out, right? So, but it's like. They're not one of the major seven kingdom lords. Hightower, I think House Hightower, I think they're a special case because Hightower's a big deal. It's a big city. Yeah. There's a big population. They have a lot of political power. So if you know, rather than land, I think you can sort of argue that the Strongs are like a second tier down because they have Harrenhal. But Harrenhal just seems like that place that you give people if you want to give.
Harrenhal like, is like what's the name of the game where you pass the bomb and you don't really want the bomb because if you have the bomb then you lose the game. It's like a timer game.
Yeah,
I feel like Harrenhal's like that. No one wants it. No one wants it. No one actually owns it.
Yeah, for sure. But also, it's like it's the place you give someone if you want to give them a quick promotion. It's like Peter Baelish bagged Harrenhal because he wanted to marry Lysa Arryn. So it was it's like if you want to if you want to lordify someone, then that's
give
that's
Harrenhal.
I don't know what standing the Strongs had prior to owning Harrenhal. To be honest, they might have just been quite a new family. I don't know.
Well, I think like, they must have been relatively low down the pecking order because the Harold Strong was the head of the King. He wasn't head of the Kingsguard. He was head of the Gold Cloaks, and that is one of those positions where it's kind of like it's lower down the chain. It's not one of the Kingsguard. It's not someone who's on the hand of on the council of the King's Council. It's an important position, but you're basically the head, the chief of police. Like, you're not actually, I mean, obviously Lionel became Hand of the King, but I feel like the Strongs were, like, not quite up there.
No, they're probably a tier below Velaryons. And I don't know, like, Velaryons, they're like...
They're from Valyria, so...
Historic
fame above many,
so it's but they seem very close, like it's they seem like the expectant to marry into royalty, so I think they're just a very old traditional family. But Driftmark ain't exactly like political powerhouse like Hightower or even Harrenhal, where it's central. I suppose you could say
Paris
things,
is the sea, isn't it?
Well, if you've got a big, if you've got a big navy, then that's a thing. That you've got
navy and wealth, and they have navy wealth and historical power, and they've obviously been paired with the Targaryens on and off through generations. So, I would probably they in this generation they were the second most powerful family. You had the Targaryens, you had the Valyrians. And you had the major houses, so you got the Starks and the Hightowers and all of those ones where they've got history, land, heritage, and their thing. You know, the Hightowers have got their thing. The Lannisters have got their thing. And then you have the ones who are slightly lower down the pecking order where they might not have either history or the lands, or they might have, you know, one or the others. And I feel like the Strongs are kind of... I wouldn't say the Strongs are on the same tier as, say, the Lannisters or the Starks in terms of old money, old family. But they're perfectly adequate. I've completely lost track of what I thought Chris was. What were we talking about?
The Vaemond is like he's no great loss, and he was a bit above his station to even really do what he was doing. But he is the catalyst that kind of fired it all off because he's the first person to make the public accusation.
Yeah, I also find it interesting that the way that from what Ultius X was saying, and I haven't read the books, but from what I can tell of what he was saying, so the way that the show played this whole sequence wasn't just Vaemond wanting Driftmark. The way that the show played it, which I thought was very interesting and a clever way of weaving it all together very nicely, was that it was a trap so that they would have to get Rhaenyra to deny the bastardry. In open court, and they were planning on doing that when Viserys was too sick to come to her defense. So it would just be her word against Alicent's word in rights of succession. So if on the stepping stone, if they could disinherit Lucerys from Driftmark, then that's one step before disinheriting Jace from Iron Throne. Yeah. Like it's a very clear stepping stone that if you can stop one child from doing it, you can stop the other child. And the way that they play that in the series was it was kind of a ploy from the Greens to try and get Rhaenyra out. And if Viserys hadn't shown up and backed her up, then that's exactly what would have happened right there and then. Yeah. So I found that super duper interesting. I also found it interesting if we're talking about Alicent in the council scene beforehand, she was talking about. Okay. Well, I was saying it was very interesting that you go first because I'm interested to see what you think I'm going to say.
Oh, about her adopting the Seven a bit more strongly. She's wearing the seven-pointed star. She's talking a little bit about, the father will allow me to forgive your transgression or something like that. You know, she's sounding an awful lot. Well, I was going to say an awful lot like Cersei at a particular time in the Game of Thrones, but probably even more so. Like she was like laying on this religious dogma like quite a lot, and I'm interested to think about why that might be.
Well, I was going to say it's somewhere for me. I was going to say something adjacent to that, not quite on those lines, but going back to the early season where we looked at them as young women. Mm-hmm. One of the things that Rhaenyra has always struggled with is the concept of being that stereotypical female character that is expected for court players to play, where they say kind of hollow platitudes and they say the expected thing and they say things like by the gods and because the father says this and the mother says that. But Alicent, I think, is a true believer and B is a very good at those empty platitudes to justify any action that she or her father or her children actually want to take. And that's kind of a comfort to her because she can make those platitudes fit her specific wants.
She also stands to gain by, shall we say, raising the level of piety in the court. When it was referenced that more and more of these, like Faith of the Seven, paraphernalia was being, was being put up around the court. It's almost like she's trying to shift the tides a little bit in so far that, like, she's trying to make an appeal to morality. She's trying to make an appeal to, maybe admitting uncomfortable truths and a strict adherence to moral principles and all this kind of stuff. It's a weapon that she's wielding, I suppose, which we've seen done before, of course.
Yeah. Well, definitely. I think she is a true believer. I think she, she's prayed and she's had faith for many years, and she clings to that faith as a comfort blanket and security for her personally. And then from a political standpoint, it's just smart because when you're thinking about this point in the culture of Westeros, we're not too far away from the Targaryens and the Valyrians being conquerors. They came with dragons and they ruled with might, and they came with these alien gods and these alien ways. And she is a true-born daughter of the Seven Kingdoms, who supports the Seven-Sided Star and supports the current gods of Westeros, and she is married to the king, but she is a person of old of Hightower. She is good and does the right thing, while here is Rhaenyra, who not only is a scandalous harlot or whore, she does these strange Targaryen things like incest, but also they've definitely really in this show drawn a line in the sand in terms of the fact that Rhaenyra and Daemon particularly love their ancestry. Their father was obsessed with their ancestry, but both of them speak High Valyrian, both of them ride dragons, both of them do blood magic, do at least blood rituals. And so if Rhaenyra and Daemon, particularly in the last episode, they were setting up the, let's rule by fear, let people think how terrible we are, let them think that we are, we are so amoral, we're unstoppable, because what will we do if we are amoral enough to murder our partners or our spouses in order to get wedded? Let them think that we're terrible. While Alicent's playing the opposite game. She's saying, let them think I'm holier than thou and good and noble and wonderful. And really pushing that line so that if Rhaemyra puts a foot wrong, she can be like, well, I told you, she is this alien foreigner who's trying to use blood magic and dragons to, you know, conquer the Westeros. She's no true queen. She is this witch bitch.
And also, actually, I suppose that I think this might also tie into like how she's very like angry at Aegon when he raped the serving woman, because it's like, if, and I don't, maybe that anger is sincerity, but maybe it's you're like jeopardizing our moral standing.
Yeah, if we're playing the righteous, holy, good family against these bastard, sex-loving witch people, then if it's found out that her son is a pervert and a rapist, then it completely underpins her family's kind of play.
Yeah.
You know, not to bring modern politics into it, but there's certainly been times where someone pitches their entire political career on having a certain stance, and then it is found out that they personally do not abide by those morals. Mm. And Alicent so far has already made one misstep in that she's holier than thou and good and wonderful, but was the first one to draw blood.
Yeah.
And she does not want her children to show the same example. And Aegon is the most obvious of the three that would slip up in terms of this. Helaena seems to be straightforward and motherly and, you know, will do what she's told. And
interestingly enough, the normal one, even though she's the one that talks in riddles, right? But like she actually does seem kind of like, yeah, like you're a bit kooky, but at the end of the day, you're, you know, like compared to what's either side of you, you're probably maybe like a bit normal, like for a Targaryen compared to your brothers, right?
Well, I think it's kind of the, you know, if ever a Targaryen is born, the gods toss a coin. If we compare the Targaryen children of Alicent with Cersei's children, Cersei, she ended up with two relatively fine, harmless kids and one shit. And I feel like it's kind of interesting. I'll be interested to see where Aemon goes, on which side of the coin he actually falls, because I find him scary but mostly harmless. But Aegon is definitely a rapist. And Helaena seems mostly harmless.
Yeah. She might tell the future, which is kind of interesting. Like, it's interesting to see what she's talking about. She calls, I think she refers to, and I could very well be wrong in this, Aegon as the beast beneath the boards. So I'm not entirely certain what that means.
Well, I think she says fear the beast beneath the boards. So that could be something that we get in the future, or it could be, again, this episode feels like not much is good. Oh, that was a gasp.
That was I know what the beast beneath the boards is.
Okay.
Mysteriously absent guest has made an appearance. It's Larys. Hey, kids, it's Larys. Come on, the beast beneath the boards, because we're looking at the rats. It's the rats, isn't it?
Yes.
Like,
so that is one theory I've heard to that particular.
Oh, damn it.
Phrasing.
Someone beat me to it. I thought I had an original thought there. Fuck.
But there's also people who've read the books. I've been told that there are things that might mean in terms of the books, which I haven't. I've tried not to spoil myself too heavily because I haven't read the books. I just occasionally hear rumors. I'm like, I will not look at the Wikipedia. I will not look at the Wikipedia.
Have you seen the Histories of the Seven Kingdoms?
I did, but it was a long time ago. The little mini film thing.
Yeah, they're good. I like them. I've seen them, but like you, I've probably forgotten some of the key bits in them. But they do cover a fair bit of Dance of the Dragons. I think it's possible.
So I want to be mostly unspoiled.
So I think there's a possibility, but they might do that thing where they don't confirm it to be like, ooh, mysterious, which is that Laris may possibly be like a green seer through the rats, because we do see...
I've definitely heard that rumour.
The rats, yeah, that's not an original Chris Ware thought, but I did kind of like, initially, I sort of laughed it off as a, oh yeah, that's the very typical Game of Thrones theory, you know, like, so, you know, the all kinds of, you know,
there are wacky a heck people ton come of rats, with.
But yeah,
so and, many rats, and they're so focused on in frame.
Yeah, and it might be that case where the rats, maybe it's like a metaphorical imagery. Maybe Laris might not technically be a green seer, but he might, but it might represent his green seeing ability. It might be a clue rather than an overt, oh, look at him doing his magic thing. Do you know what I mean? Like, it might be symbolic rather than literal, or maybe it might be deliberately ambiguous. But but when you think of what lives beneath the boards, well, rats, rodents, right? Especially in like medieval stinky buildings, right?
Stinky buildings.
There's a lot of rats beneath the boards in that that place. So. Maybe you got to, if you're fearing the beast beneath the boards, maybe Laris is the one does Aegon in.
Maybe.
I don't know if Aegon survives this.
It's a mystery.
I
don't know who survives, and I don't trust, to be honest, I don't believe anyone's going to survive this. I think it's going to be madness and chaos.
I think, I don't know who it could be. I think it might be like, we might get some of the Valerian, like maybe Jacerys Velaryon. Like he might be the surviving guy. Maybe Helaeus.
Things like Alicent apparently has a fourth child. Not been mentioned and not been shown. And so I've got the feeling if everyone dies off, the one who was off studying at Hightower might be the one who becomes king. It might be one of those really like, did you know there's a fourth child who's just been boring in the background and wasn't murdered? Well, there we go.
I suspect what they might have actually done is they might have cut that fourth child
so loyal and faithful so far, though. It would be a surprise to me.
Perhaps, perchance, maybe there will be a revealing. But Aegon Targaryen and Helaena Targaryen, they have children listed on the family tree, yes. Jaehaerys Targaryen and Jaehaera Targaryen. I don't know if they've been born yet, or whether or not that's
Have been born, because there was a line when Alicent was tearing Aegon a new one for raping the serving girl. Mm. Helaena came in and said, "Have you seen Diana? She's meant to dress the children."
Oh,
so Diana was the serving maid who was responsible or looking after Helena's and Aegon's babies. And so the fact that basically Aegon raped the nursemaid is really crappy of him. Like, the one who they hired to look after their children is the one he's attacking. He might have even attacked her in, like, it was in his chambers. But still, she particular, like, she was meant to be there to help with the children. I think they do have children. I think they're very, probably very young children.
Mm. And we've seen
that Aegon and Helaena are still pretty young.
Yeah, and we've seen Aegon Targaryen and Viserys Targaryen, of course, earlier in the episode as well.
Yes.
So yeah, the fact that it seems that the character guide only brings in characters that are at least mentioned on the show, because we've not seen, for example, Jocelyn Baratheon and Aemon Targaryen. Rhaenyra's parents, unless we saw them at that very, very first scene at the council. Same with Baelon Targaryen and Alyssa Targaryen. Unless they were like in the background of the great council scene. Then...
Well, what's interesting as well is Gawain Hightower, we have seen, but he doesn't have a picture on the template.
He doesn't. Which one's Gawain Hightower?
So that's Alicent's brother, and we saw him once in episode 1 in the tourney, Damon, when Damon and Otto had had their standoff, where Otto was like, he's been cutting off limbs, you shouldn't let him be in charge of the Gold Cloaks, it's only going to lead to disaster, don't like Damon, he's crappy. And then during the tourney, in Revenge, Damon challenged Gawain Hightower to the joust. Damon got to choose his competitor, and in order to spite Otto, he challenged Gawain. And knocked him off his horse. And so Allison was very upset with that. But he then, Damon was like, hey, Allison, you want to give me your favor? So, like, he was sassing Otto twice over in both unseating his son and then asking for the favor from his daughter. He was being, you know, the little drama mama that he wants to be. But we haven't seen Gawain since he was unhorsed. I thought he might have died, but he seems to still be alive, which means that there might be another part of the Greens, that another chain in the Greens that we could have more interesting stuff with, because we haven't seen him since he was a very young knight who got unhorsed. So he might end up doing something interesting as we go forward. Because what if Alison wants allies... Who knows? Has Gawain married someone? Has he? What has he done? What has he been doing this whole time? Has he just been hanging out in Hightower?
What would be particularly rewarding, I think, from a watching point of view, would be if all of these little minor characters, many of whom would have been at the tournament, ended up playing roles in the wars to come. Like they were just laying a little bit of an Easter egg. So, oh, that character there, like he isn't just pulled in for the sake of the show, he actually appeared previously and all this kind of stuff, which they do often tend to do. I was quite surprised on rewatching Game of Thrones how early Kevin Lannister actually makes an appearance in the show.
I'd have to look it up, but there is a lord who was the first to congratulate Rhaenyra after the birth of Joffrey.
Was that Beesbury?
When she literally came out, was it Beesbury? He literally came out of the chamber to greet her, and then he was also the first to greet her when she got out of the carriage in this episode. And all he's done so far is greet Rhaenyra and be like, hi, and she's been like, oh, you!
Oh, that was Alan Caswell.
Caswell? Okay, Caswell. Yeah. So I'm interested to see if they pull him back, because he's the only minor character that I've seen spoken to by name twice, and as far as I can tell, there's nothing interesting otherwise.
Well, I can click on his picture. What does it? Oh, it says 404 page not found. Well done, HBO. Oh no, wait, hold on. Is it coming up? Come on, Alan Caswell. Oh right, it's come up now. I've refreshed it. Something went amiss. Okay. Oh, this is kind of interesting. I think yes. Oh, okay, all right, so what it's got here, Alan Caswell. Lord Alan Caswell is a supporter of Princess Rhaenyra within the halls of the Red Keep. That's his entire, like, biography.
Okay.
And the only other section, related characters, related character is Rhaenyra Targaryen. So,
He's one of those characters that's so incredibly minor, I want to know what he will do later. I don't know whether or not maybe he might be one of Rhaenyra's spies, because I feel like she's the only one without spies or connection to people who can spy, and I feel like she does need some good spies. That's one of the only characters that I've noticed as a background character, and I've been like, ooh, what are you doing? Other than the Kingsguard characters, who seem to be kind of just in the background being useful.
Well, interestingly enough, they've added a few Kingsguard. They've added Arryk Carguyle, Eric Cargill, Arryk and Eric, the Cargills.
So, I think they're twins, or they're meant to be twins.
Oh, okay. Well, why would you call
Eric and Eric? Because this is a world where we have like five Aemons, Rhaenyra, Baelor, like, you know, you have all of the characters who are named after other characters and have various versions of similarity. So if you're going to name twins in the Game of Thrones, you're going to be mean.
Yes, yeah, Allison
called him the wrong name, and he was like, actually, I'm this one.
Yeah, it's like calling your twin Penny, Jenny and Penny.
Yeah, my twin would not appreciate that.
No.
Yeah, I'll be interested to see as well, because one of the big things with Rhaenyra when she chose the Kingsguard was she specifically chose warriors without political affiliation, because those were who she wanted. She wanted people who were good fighters who would be there, and she obviously chose poorly in the fact that Christian's a bit crazy. But I'll be interested to know, because obviously she's been away from court for so long, these new guards presumably were hired by Alicent. So were they hired for political reasons rather than traditional good warrior reasons?
Well, I mean, the thing is, though, these are the ones that are closest around you. Obviously, you want adept fighters, but those adept fighters are nothing if they're not, like, of the fiercest loyalty. Because they're the closest to you. You're most vulnerable to them more over anyone else. They're your eyes and ears when you sleep. So loyalty is like,
loyalty is as important.
I'd say it's a 50-50 split. Loyalty / trustworthiness and skill at fighting. Because there will be other house guards that, there was a reason why the Mountain in Game of Thrones was not in the Kingsguard until much later on, because he's a maniac that just kills things and people for a laugh. Like, and when I say kill, I mean pull the head off. Like, you can't have, like, the Mountain is a ridiculous choice for Kingsguard, because yes, he might very well be the best fighter in the realm, or certainly up there, but like, he might just get bored and kill you, you know? Or you might...
It's the balance, isn't it? But I'll be interested to see the fact that I don't know whether or not the joke about Alicent not knowing his name was meant to be haha twins.
I think it was meant to be twins, maybe.
She was distracted or whatever. But I'll be interested to know whether or not that means anything in the long run. I did find it also the fact that Aemon was training with proper steel. Interesting. And his line about he doesn't give a fuck about tourneys reminded me of how Ned never fought in tourneys, because he had a whole perception of being like, if I want to see a man fight, I want to see him fight for real.
He doesn't want to
spoil what he can do, and I feel like Aemon's the kind of person who would also agree with that sentiment.
Well, I don't know, because he kind of was showing off a bit, wasn't he?
He was showing off a bit, but also, like, you know, the concept that he's more about actual war than he is about. And again, this is not an original Jenny thought. I will not lay claim to this, but Ulchis Ferrex pointed out that in episode one, Rhaenys was like, these guys are young and dumb and full of seed and just want to warmonger, basically. They want to go out into the world and kill people because there's been peace for too long. And I think Aemon perhaps encapsulates that thought process a little bit, where he just wants to go out and kill things because he's bored.
Yeah. I think angry. And also, like, their knowledge of war is romanticized. Even, like, were they born... They were born after some of the conflict on the Stepstones. They were born after some of the conflict on the Stepstones began. And you hear stories of... was it around the time? Or I forget now. But, they would have heard stories about dragon fire and massive victories, because, of course, they're related to the victors of the war in the Stepstone. So they're going to hear the most romanticized version of these tales. They don't know war. So, you know, and Daemon in particular. So be... Like, I suppose he might even think of himself as some kind of hardened veteran because he's had an eye taken out.
Yeah. Talking of eyes being taken out, I felt like Viserys's eye loss might be paired quite nicely with the concept of, like, the Eye of the Fates or Odin's eye, where in order to see clearly and see kind of the truth of things, he lost an eye, or he lost an eye and now he sees the truth of things. Because this whole episode felt like a last ditch attempt of what he should have been doing 10, 20 years ago. The feel like he's finally been able to see his failings as a king, only on his deathbed after he's lost the eye. So if we're going for like a nice little allegory, the idea of losing an eye in order to see the truth, or to be able to see the truth of the future, or the truth that he of the future of what he's wrought with his lack of kingly natural abilities. It was one of those things that kind of pinged in my brain where I was like, this feels like an Odin thing. all of the incense in his bedroom reminded me of like smoke over Valyria and like the doom of House Targaryen and the doom of old Valyria, particularly as at this point the last of the other old Valyrian house is, you know, this is nearly the end of their line. It is basically the end of the line, because with Vaemon dead and both of the Valyrian granddaughters being married off,
yeah,
actually means that the Valyrians are gone. That is the end of that Valyrian line.
And also, it's worth bearing in mind that if you've got Jacerys, Lucerys, and Joffrey, and two of them die, the one that may become the king will have his name changed to Targaryen.
Yeah. So the true-born daughters are going to be married, so they'll lose their name. They have the name Targaryen, but the blood will be weakened and the name will be gone.
Yeah, interesting things to come.
I think that the smoke over the old Valyria reminded me of that, whereas one of the house lines of old Valyria is gone.
Yeah. And of course, Viserys's model table was had cobwebs and so forth on.
Yeah. Very sad and beautifully done. Like, I think anyone who's had a little dying relative go through that. It was like, I think some of the CGI makeup effects were a little bit changeable, but the physical acting and the script writing, and kudos to all the actors involved, because they definitely resonated the concept of like seeing a parent or a grandparent kind of degrade and going from, oh, I thought they were fine, to, oh gosh.
Paddy Constantine was I'm mispronouncing that, I'm pretty sure, but his acting was phenomenal through. I mean, to be fair, I don't think there's a weak link at all, really. I think everyone's held down their parts incredibly well.
I think the casting's phenomenal as well. I think today this episode was the first episode where there was a moment where current Rhaenyra just looked so much like young Rhaenyra.
Yeah.
And she was talking to Alicent. There was just one shot where I was like, oh my gosh, the casting is amazing.
Absolutely. I don't know how they done it. And to be fair, casting for Game of Thrones I think this is better casting and more difficult casting. And also with Game of Thrones, what I noticed is they use a lot of actors that were already in the sphere of medieval fantasy actors, like David Bradley and Charles Dance, and the whole shebang. And here, like, I am much less familiar. Like, Matt Smith is like the only actor that I've seen in anything else, he's done a cracking job.
One of the things I really love is when they've reused actors from the Game of Thrones series. So one of the Lannister twins, that's one of the Lannister cousins. And you're like, what? That's so weird and wonderful. I think the casting choices for this in particular, because they are having more diversity in choosing to make the Valyrians people of colour, trying to work out how to do that in a tasteful and meaningful way while casting young actors, old actors, making sure that it makes sense. It's a lot of it's another level to casting with skill and talent to get actors that look and feel right for the characters, and also were able to act the roles. It's a real credit to the casting directors that they've managed to do it for all of the cast. It's really impressive.
Absolutely. And I imagine that this series will launch the careers of a few up and coming actors as well. So thoroughly thrilled with their choices there. And actually, to be fair to Matt Smith, he has, for someone who's got such a recognizable face, did not once see Doctor Who or the Doctor. Do you know what I mean? Like he has transitioned from a very recognizable role to another very recognizable role, without typecasting himself, which is very impressive, really.
I think, and likable in both.
And I feel very uncomfortable that I like Daemon Targaryen as much as I do. That meme that Stacey posted about, like, that picture of, like, me gearing up to defend Daemon Targaryen no matter what he's done. It's like, yeah, I can sympathize with that because...
I'll give points to Aemond as well. Aemond scares the bejeebus out of me, but he is likable. It's kind of annoying.
Aemond... I don't know. He may become.
I find him much like more likable than Aegon. Aegon is awful.
Aegon has Joffrey vibes. Like
100%.
In that kind of
Swan Son. Yeah.
Or like Joffrey, but also like pervert creepy as well. So maybe like.
Joffrey was a bit pervert creepy too. I think if he'd been allowed to. Rape some serving girls, I think he would have done.
I don't think he was. Maybe I'm wrong. I think he just liked violence.
Violence over sex.
Yeah, like I think he's arguably just. I don't know how like what age he would have been. I'm gonna guess like 15 or something. But I think his lust in life is enjoying the suffering of others. Whereas I think Aegon Targaryen is
lust in life is lust.
Yeah, in horrible ways. I get the same kind of like, they don't care if they're cruel or maybe, I think Joffrey probably enjoyed being cruel, whereas Aegon is just like, he just doesn't care. It doesn't, or like being cruel to others to like, just doesn't apply to him, I guess, perhaps.
Yeah, maybe.
So one's a psychopath, one's a sociopath. But, like, we're spitting hairs there, right?
Yeah, blonde hairs. Silver blonde or gold blonde.
One thing I was kind of interested is that, like, making the Valyrian family black was actually a real touch of genius, because if you think about what Ned Stark was doing in season one of Game of Thrones, Seed is strong, dark hair, blonde of head, all that kind of stuff. It's like,
all feeds in. It's genius. It's genius, like, and it's also sensible, because we're in a generation where we want more diversity. We want more diverse storytelling. So it's a great way of really highlighting, if ever the question comes in Game of Thrones, where people rewatch Game of Thrones and go, well, there's not a very diverse cast here. You can say, well, look, there was. And then bad things happened and the bloodline was watered down and potentially destroyed, depending on where we get to. That's part of it. Part of it isn't just the lack of representation of diverse people in media. There's actually a story point that explains it that is not from our world. Our world is not, like, the reason why there is diversity in our world is the lack, is the kind of, the standard default, unfortunately, and hopefully that will change. While the reasoning now behind the lack of diversity in this world has a reason, and that is the story that they're telling currently with this particular season.
It weaves into the story in a very meaningful way. But also, like, with Ned Stark, like, his like logic and evidence and all of that kind of stuff, like, it was very for the world. Very like academic and somewhat tenuous, like even lining up all of the facts, and it's like, you know what, like, it could still be the case that blonde of head were like still comes through, right? Especially in Game of Thrones land, where like genetics seems to be, like, whereas like blonde hair seems to be a little bit more dominant than maybe in real life, especially with Targaryens, but like I don't know how it works with Lannisters, to be honest. But like like Ned Stark was, his accusation was on more tenuous data than like Vaemond. It's like,
yeah,
you know, like the like Jacerys, Lucerys, Joffrey, they're not like mixed race where you really would expect
them. No, there's really no way that Rhaenyra thought that she could get away with that, other than the fact that she can get away with it, or she thinks she can. But I still do defend her that, you know, she and Laenor did try. And who could Rhaenyra have found who she genuinely could trust to father her offspring with? It would have been so hard to do. So, you know, I'm sure there would have been ways, but...
And it's not hard
ways to do to be trusted.
Yeah, and it's not like, you know, and this is using some Game of Thrones logic, or House of the Dragon logic here. It's not like Rhaenyra was having it away with, like, some grunt of the City Watch or something. Like, it was Harwin.
Son of the Hand of the King.
Yeah, Harwin Strong, who, you know, like, well-known, tough guy, and generally I imagine seen as quite an attractive man. Like, it's not like you know it's like, it's not like your bloodline is really being weakened, right? Like, you, it's good genes one way or the other, right? Like, it's like,
yeah, and there was always the chance that her children could have been born with blonde hair. Like, there is that chance, recessive gene, but there is always the chance they could have been born with blonde hair.
We don't know. In the Game of Thrones world, it might not be a recessive gene, though. Because all of the Velaryons have the blonde hair, all of the Targaryens have the blonde hair.
They're all super into incest.
But also, like, with Jon Snow, Targaryen, not blonde hair. Is that an anomaly? Is that a freak occurrence?
Yeah. We have to remember that even though the hair is recessive, dragon riding genetics is not. Like, her children ride dragons. I feel like that should be evidence enough that there is some purity in the bloodline, even if the bloodline is just hers, but still.
Yes, but I don't know. Like, I know there is I hear it again and again, the Targaryen and Valyrian, like, linking to dragon riding, but like, is that established lore, or is that just something that seems to be assumed by a large number of book readers?
I don't think there's ever been a dragon rider who is not a Targaryen or a bloodline Targaryen, ever.
We're hitting up against the limits of my knowledge here, but doesn't Missaria become a dragon rider?
I don't know.
I don't know. Someone might become a dragon. But then again, you can always make the case, oh, well, they might be a bastard, you know, because who knows? You know, so I
don't know. Them might be a bastard. The Game of Thrones t-shirt.
Yeah. And it might be the case that, like, it's manufactured that dragons are susceptible to Valyrian. Like when dragons are raised, they're raised around people that speak Valyrian. Like, maybe they just don't understand. Like, maybe you just have to know Valyrian to ride a dragon. Maybe you have, because they raise the dragons on the Valyrian language. So maybe it's manufactured, a manufactured closed group.
I don't think we've ever seen one of the guys who live in the dragon pit, who do kind of the dragon rearing. We've never seen them ride a dragon. We've only ever seen Targaryens ride a dragon. So they can communicate with the dragons, but the dragons won't necessarily take commands from them or let them be ridden by the dragon pit guys. So I think you do have to have Targaryen blood to be a dragon rider. I think that's the strong implication.
I think that's a direct bait and switch. Thinking about it now, I'm convincing myself, maybe wrongly, I'm not dying on this hill. I because the dragon keepers, I think they're just not allowed to ride dragons because they're not important enough. They're just staff. But like, if you speak Valyrian around the dragon, dragons don't understand English or whatever Westerosi or whatever, right? I'll call it English. But the only language they understand is Valyrian, which is obviously a language only spoken by the most highly of educated, basically, like people of old Valyria, right? So we're talking only the absolute upper crust of society who speak this language will be able to ride a dragon, because a dragon just won't understand commands from anyone else. And
I'm not sure, because there were some people saying that, like, when Aemon was claiming the dragon that used to be Laena's, the big grandma dragon, that she was smelling the Targaryen blood before she conceded to his commands.
I don't know. I reckon. It feels to me like this might be a case of there being like manufactured myth and lore and legend around Targaryens and dragons, when in reality the truth might be just something a little bit more plainer and manufactured for the sake of presenting an image of power, right? Because of
course that would be fun. That would be a fun Game of Thrones subversion.
Yeah, because there's going to be like, the thing is, if dragons, let's say for example, did speak English, or not speak English, but understand English, then it would mean that they could potentially be ridden by just about anyone, commoners or other lords, and it would weaken the Targaryens' power base, because the Targaryens very well know that their entire like strength rests on the dragons, which means they probably, if there isn't like some miracle of genetics, they probably have some manufactured way of keeping dragon riders within their little circle of power. And if that's not, well, and it's a little bit like,
I'm going to agree to disagree generally on the theory, because there's a whole stuff about like the old Valyrian blood mages combining and messing with genetics basically, and making abominations and creatures and potentially making dragons, and also mixing the blood of the dragon literally, not figuratively, with the Targaryen line. And that's why Targaryens do dragon riding. Now, that could be interesting myth and legend, and again, I wouldn't put it past George R. Or the showrunners to be like, haha, cool subversion, you thought it was magic, but actually it's just language. But I think that would be a step in, given how much this show has embraced the magical aspects, I think it would be a shame to kind of make it mundane.
The show may very well end up doing that thing where it's like,
we'll see.
It could be magic, or it couldn't be magic, or you assume that it's magic even though there's nothing actually magical on display. Like, for example, Larys's green seeing ability that he might not have, or it might be metaphorical, or it might be rumor or myth or legend, or appear so but turns out not to be so. Like that mystery, that ambiguity might be sort of sewn in by design. But also it kind of, like, if you want to look for like historical parallels to this, it's a little bit like in the olden days learning Latin. Latin was like your key to knowledge. Like if you wanted to learn and be a learned person, you would find a way to learn Latin, and generally speaking, Latin was it was something that was spoken and learned and read by the higher classes, especially when like other languages were being sort of expressed more commonly in written text. Like Latin was seen as the Valyrian of its day. So, you know, maybe there's a parallel to spot it. Don't get me wrong, I know it's a left field like sort of off the cuff theory, but I don't know. I'm starting to convince myself.
It's fun, but I am unconvinced, but I'm happy for you to be wildly theoretical.
I would like to know, someone leave a comment. Am I right or not? I don't know. The thing is though,
I would be happy to be proven wrong.
The chances are I suspect the ambiguity is more entertaining than having it established, and as such I don't think it will ever be conclusive. I would like to present it as an argument if nothing else, but I suspect it will always be teased and ambiguous, but who knows.
Bring it back around to this episode though. I did find it, in terms of again parallels, In the same way that, so Viserys's arrival in the throne chamber being the epic scene that it was with the soaring music and the kind of abject tragedy of it all, and him refusing help, but then Daemon actually showing the kindness of putting, like, helping his brother and putting the crown on his head, and all of, like, that beautiful, like, a lot of that scene. I don't think there's a whole lot of allegory or deeper meaning or long foreshadowing. I think it really was kind of just highlighting the moment and the gravitas of the fact that, obviously, Viserys hasn't come to do his work for a long, long time. He's been asleep on the job for a long, long time. And he's finally stepping up his game, too late, but trying to do what he should have done ages ago in terms of supporting Rhaenyra and doing his kingly duties. I did find it interesting that his attitude to arriving was, you know, rightfully prickly of the, why I shouldn't be here. I am a sick old man. I shouldn't be here right now. And I noticed during that scene that Rhaenyra kept rubbing her pregnant belly. In a similar sort of feeling of, I shouldn't be here right now. I shouldn't be battling this claim for succession while I am pregnant. And so I'm slightly worried about Rhaenyra's pregnancy, because this is her sixth child. And so far she's been very successful, but if we're talking about parallels, like death, birth, I don't know. There's something about the fact that they kept highlighting her pregnancy that has got me nervous.
Well, the thing is, you mentioned this last week, very clever, is that Rhaenyra is in a powerful enough position that she can choose not to have the help of maesters, but rather the help of female midwives. So, you know, she enjoys the wisdom of people who are not men, who have only ever learned with men, from men, in a entirely masculine environment, who then are put into the world where they're expected to help women with their reproductive health. It could just very well be illustrating the fact that Rhaenyra's choice in, you know, rejecting that orthodoxy might actually have allowed her to have six children, you know, like
we'll see. It's one of those things. I just noticed that also the costuming in this episode was stunning. It was just one of those things where I'm like, oh, maternity wear. Love it.
Absolutely, yeah. I love the costumes in this. Although you say, or not, that the costumes are a bit of a drop stitch compared to Game of Thrones.
It took me a while to acclimatise to it. I think this episode, honestly, I did notice how good the costuming was, and I think it's because the gowns have been I think the men's dress has been good most of the way through, but I think the lack of structure in the first couple of episodes really threw me off. But I think they are building more structured gowns, which I think is just more what I'm familiar with in terms of the Game of Thrones lore. And so now I've acclimatised to that. I'm just like, okay, yeah, I can deal with this. I thought the embroidery on Rhaenyra's gown during the dinner was lovely.
Also, we've got less geographical variety. I saw that video from... what was the name? I forget it now.
Bernadette Banner?
Yeah, I did set a subscribe, actually. Because, I was talking about her with some of the history buffs around town. They all subscribed to her. It's like, you're not subscribed.
She's great. It's great.
she did a great breakdown of all of the areas of Westeros and why they wear what they wear, which was great. Of course, we don't get such an enjoyment in this season, having it basically be set in a very small number of places. And we don't see that much in the way of slice of life living, really. Maybe a little bit in the episode where they sneak out of the castle, but we see, substantially less variety. And what we do see is King's Landing attire, which, as was illustrated, tends to be a bit of a mishmash because it's a trading hub. So,
I think the last episode was great. I enjoyed it, and I'm really both excited and terrified for what's coming forward in the next couple of episodes.
Absolutely. I think next episode is going to be the payoff to this tension that was building throughout all of this. I noticed the it was a sickeningly tense drama, really, of a lot of people. It was, oof, she's going to go down. So yeah, I think episode 9 and 10 are going to be, I wouldn't be surprised if they're the best episodes of the season, although hopes are high on this one. Also, just on a side note, I did pin my hopes on House of the Dragon. I did say I was expecting goodness from this, and I was not disappointed.
I think I said I'm setting my bar low, and then I'll see what happens, and I'm hoping I'm surprised, and I am so far very happily surprised.
Mm. Well, there was interestingly enough, actually, and one thing I was surprised about is that there was an interview done with, was it Miguel Sapochnik or one of the big showrunners, and they were talking about sex and rape scenes in the show, and they were going to be like, well, what's the situation here? Because obviously there were some very badly dropped balls in Game of Thrones. Are they going to like learn from those mistakes and everything? And then the answer that was given was very, very, very ambiguous. It was like, we're not going to be gratuitous, but we're also not going to shy away from the true, oppression that women are under and the abuse that women receive.
Then you had this wonderful sequence in this one where you have Alicent gaslighting this poor girl into saying, like, you do not tell anyone the truth of this because they will think you're a whore, paying her and making her drink moon tea. So if anyone does claim to anything, then Alicent will say, well, she was a whore. She threw herself at my son, and then she was paid. Like, you know, this girl is utterly shamed, dismissed. And they said in the episode where Rhaenyra had the moon tea or didn't drink the moon tea, in order for it to be effective without doing harm, it's got to be brewed very specially. And this would have been brewed quite quickly and hurriedly to resolve the situation. So potentially this poor girl could have damaged fertility, or it could be slightly toxic to her because it was brewed hurriedly.
And also,
Grand Maester.
Like, that's not going to be a nice thing to drink. Like, that kind of stuff probably makes you rather ill. So that was a... But the thing is about it is that they weren't as explicit or gratuitous like they were in Game of Thrones, right? Like, but... And it didn't need to be, right? Like, all of the...
They didn't shy away from the trauma.
No, they didn't shy away from the trauma.
The explicit kind of sexuality of it.
Exactly. So... I think lessons have been learned in House of Dragon, I think that was it waylaid fears of mine, to be honest, because I thought there's going to be some fucked up shit that's going to happen in next episode, but
very probably
I don't think none of the violence I've seen has been what I would describe as gratuitous or flippant or unearned or anything like that. Like, everything's had a reason. So
yeah, I'm happily surprised and excited to see what happens next.
Can't wait. Right, have we said everything we got to say?
I think so. I didn't make any notes, so I'm hoping that I've said everything I want to say. If not, I'm sure next episode, if I get a chance to hang out on this again, I'll come up with 100 new things.
Well, you're always welcome on the show, as you, of course, know. But also, if you cannot make it, feel free to drop us a voice note or something, and we'll pop it in. Cool. All right. Well, thank you very much, folks at home, for joining us. It's a pleasure. Don't forget to say goodbye to Matt, and let me know if you think I'm right or not about the dragon thing. I kind of talked myself into it, but I know that I'm going to, like, watch an Alt-Shift-X video or something like that, and it's going to, like, break me out of it, I think. I don't know. Who knows? Maybe. I don't know. It feels plausible. But anyway, thank you very much for watching, and as always, toodaloo. That's not really the thing you say as always. Goodbye.
Bye-bye.